Food writer Mario Thomas wrote, "When your back is turned, a woman will come up with prunes and cottage cheese or pea and walnut salad or an elaborate bowl of mixed greens tasting exactly like a bale of wet hay. A good salad maker must have meticulousness, patience, cleanliness, and a very alert sense of touch and taste. For some reason, it takes a man to master this really fine art."
I'm just picturing, like, creeping up on a dude with a bunch of prunes and cottage cheese. He's like, take that.
And then you throw it in his salad and you're like, ha ha, run away.
Gotcha.
Hi, listeners. From Van Valen Productions and Yum Day, welcome to Every Day is a Food Day. I'm your host, Anna Van Valen.
And I'm your other host, Leah Ballantyne. Today, we're turning over a new leaf.
And getting all dressed up, because this episode is all about salad.
First, we'll talk about National Salad Month, how to make it through National Egg Salad Week, and the dark past of Hellman's Mayonnaise. We'll take a stab at the history of Caesar salad and pour over the dressing so mysterious they made a documentary about it.
But that's just the tip of the iceberg. In the deep dish, we're going to try to answer the question, if meat is manly, why is salad girly? And we'll talk about the meme so relatable, it left us laughing alone with our salads.
Check out the Mana Cooking app for a special recipe inspired by this episode. If you like the show, please help us out by leaving us a rating and quick review, and be sure to subscribe. If you want to support this women and BIPOC-created independent podcast, head over to our website and click the link that says Buy Us a Coffee and help us cover the cost of production.
For more great content about the foods and stories we talk about on this show, and to get a peek behind the scenes, connect with us on social media by following @FoodDayPod. Visit our website, yumday.co/podcast, where you can join our mailing list and enter our monthly giveaway for the chance to win a delicious prize. And don't worry, all these links are in the show notes. So today, we're talking about salad. And what I want to say about that is, trust us. Just trust us.
Yeah.
I know. I know. You looked at this and you were like, salad? How did we go from French fries?
Barbecue?
Barbecue? Margaritas?
Salad.
Man, season two took a turn. But trust us.
Trust us, guys.
I was thinking about this and how, like, I don't think I've ever ordered a salad because I wanted a salad. You know what I mean? Unless I'm at some ridiculous restaurant and their salads pretend to be healthy, but they're actually like the Chili's quesadilla explosion.
Oh, yeah. Loaded up with all kinds of processed cheese.
Yep. Excuse me. The croutons are quesadillas. They're mini quesadillas.
Wait, what?
On the Chili's quesadilla explosion salad.
BRB.
Dude, it's so good.
That sounds
It's like
good.
1,900 calories. Like, some listeners, something we're going to establish today is that salads are not necessarily healthy. It is a ruse.
They're not?
No, if it has explosion in the name, it's probably not health food. But, you know, it's usually in reaction to something else, right? So it's usually like, oh, I ate a lot last night, I'll have a salad, or like, or I know I'm going out to like have pizza tonight, so I should have a salad for lunch or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's never like, yeah, I want a salad. And I feel like that's how this episode happened too.
Yeah, that's true. I think we were like, French fries, barbecue, margaritas. Oh, we should probably have a salad.
Well, that's basically what we did. Mm-hmm. We were like, oh man, we haven't done a vegetable.
We just did our first fruit.
So basically, we picked salad today mm-hmm. the same way you would pick a salad as your side instead of French fries. You'd be like, oh, I should do a salad.
We did this for Michelle Obama.
Oh, but trust us, we have a great episode for you today. Mm-hmm. We're going to make you laugh. We're going to make you think.
Yeah.
We might inspire you to eat a salad. And if not, we get it.
It's okay if you don't want to.
It's okay. Salad is very fraught. That's what I've learned working on this episode. It's not just the gender thing. Mm-hmm. It's like a whole society, what we should and shouldn't do. Like, salad has been imbued with great moral responsibility.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
For some leafy greens.
It really is. Mm-hmm. And it knows how sad it is. It welcomes the quesadilla croutons. They're not croutons. They're chunks of quesadillas, but they're like quesadilla croutons. Because it's just cosplaying as a salad.
Do they try to tuck little triangles of quesadilla in under the greens, or they just throw it on top? Because you know.
They're like artfully placed around.
Okay.
But they do that thing where they're like, they cut it into little triangles. So if you think, oh, there's just like a couple of things in here. If you laid out all those triangles together, that'd be a whole ass quesadilla.
Huh.
Chili's, we're on to you. And we thank you.
Thank you.
How do you feel about salad?
I like salad. Now, Leah. I do have cravings for salads.
Leah.
I do. You know, when you just want something kind of cold and crispy.
Sure.
Yeah. But there, it's got to be a certain type of salad. I love like the crunch of a romaine lettuce.
Mm.
There are a couple of salad places that I do enjoy. I like Sweet Green, you know, if I'm like feeling like I want to pay a lot of money for an expensive salad vibe.
Yeah.
Tender Greens.
The places like right. Sweet Green, Tender Greens, they put a lot of effort into it. And mm-hmm. you really feel like you had a meal.
That's true. I do feel full after I eat a salad from there. Mm-hmm. And I think they do a good job.
And they put a little crostini.
Yeah.
Just a little slice of bread there. The slice of bread goes a long way.
It does.
And you're like, okay, something on this plate is going to taste good.
Mm.
And it's that bread. I'm starting to feel guilty that I don't love salad.
Well, it can't just be any salad.
Like, salad can be a great base
mm-hmm.
for some good stuff. And it can make you feel a little good about yourself and like you didn't eat too much. You are going to be hungry soon. There's no way around that.
Right.
But like this sad, like translucent iceberg lettuce with like a sad cherry tomato and some shredded carrots and then like sad vinaigrette.
Oh, yeah.
We're not really selling salad. I need to work harder at this. Okay, guys. I can't wait to talk about salad today. Salad is the greatest food.
It is the greatest. You know, there was a period in my life where I could not eat grape tomatoes or cherry tomatoes because one day I'd eaten a rotten one and it was so disgusting. I had to throw up. And then from that point on, I didn't trust the little grape tomatoes.
Oh no, that's awful.
Yeah.
You couldn't tell from the outside that it was rotten?
Yep. So I refused. And even if I sliced into it, it just, the memory of eating that rotten one stuck in my brain.
Yeah, I can see that.
I'm just now getting back into it.
I'm not a big tomato fan. I like the flavor. I like tomato sauce.
Mm-hmm.
But just like a tomato on a sandwich or a salad, it's like 90% water. It's just water and seeds.
Mm.
So to me, it's just making my food wet.
You just got soggy food
now. It's just soggy food now. It's not adding a ton of flavor, especially like the big beefsteak tomatoes don't really taste like anything.
Now, would you eat something like a caprese salad, which is basically tomato and cheese, mostly cheese?
Probably not. But bruschetta, yes.
Okay.
Kind of sauteed in olive oil
yeah.
and cheese and on top of bread. That's my kind of salad.
Must have bread.
Must have bread. I mean, I love bread so much. When I was a kid and, you know, you'd hear these stories about like, oh, he was thrown in jail and only given bread and water. I was like, awesome. Sign me up.
Yeah.
Bread, good. Water, good.
Mm-hmm.
Don't need much else.
Well, in our French fry episode, that Frenchman, Antoine Parmentier or
yes.
August, whatever his
yeah,
name was.
Yeah, Parmentier. Oh, right. That like
yeah.
the potatoes kept him alive.
Exactly. The potatoes kept him alive because that's all he got served when he was a prisoner of war.
Right? Could be worse.
It could be worse.
Could have been worse, Parmentier.
Yeah. Could have gotten salad.
You just brought him a wedge.
Uh-huh. What do you think about the wedge salads? I feel like that's so lazy.
It's very lazy. Here's the thing, though. It's cheating because it's bacon bits and ranch.
Yeah.
The lettuce is basically a vehicle for the
it's
bacon bits and
it.
Ranch. You're like, sure, that's hard to get on my fork, so I'll use the iceberg.
But if I put it on a wedge of lettuce, this works.
Mm-hmm. Also, I don't trust that that's washed.
Right.
And as we know,
guys,
lettuce is an incredibly dangerous food.
It's very dangerous. I feel like at least every other year, if not once or twice during a year, there's always some lettuce that's come back to kill us.
Oh my God. Chipotle's almost gone under like 17 times because of salad. The culprit.
Mm-hmm.
Salad bars. We've been over this.
Oh, salad bars.
Don't do it. They're filthy, easily poisoned.
That's a callback.
So this is a callback to our poisonous foods episode, which you should all listen to if you haven't yet, because it's absolutely delightful. But we talk about the Rajneesh, a cult that poisoned salad bars, and the fact that when all these people got food poisoning, no one was like, something's wrong. They're just like, well, I guess somebody didn't wash the lettuce enough. That's just too close to it being poison. If the difference is somebody didn't rinse it enough, that 500 people got sick.
Right. That's scary.
But I mean, I'm not trying to bash salad, and you should listen to the rest of this episode.
It can be really great for you.
It can. It can be refreshing. Mm-hmm. That was one of our standard things when we worked at the film studio, the commissaries.
Yeah, I did like the salad bars there.
Yeah, weren't a ton of options, but the salad bar was a good standby.
Uh-huh. Well, the salad bar lets you feel like you're in control.
Right.
You get to choose what kinds of greens you want on it, what sorts of toppings you want to put on your salad.
Yeah, how many olives?
Mm-hmm.
Is the answer all of them? The scoop's in your hand, man. But we've got a lot to talk about today. A lot of interesting stories about dressing. I'm going to get all gender theory on you. No, I'm going to try to hold back on my gender theory.
Don't hold back.
Except for one. I'm just going to talk about one gender theorist.
Okay.
Just like one gender theorist. Let me have it.
We'll let you have it.
So, Leah, what do you say? Do we mix it up? Toss around some food holidays, some backstories?
I think we should. Let's spring into it. All right, Anna. So I'm going to tell you about some food holidays related to salad. In case you were wondering, there are some.
Okay.
There are actually three that I'm going to talk about. And then from there, we'll dig into a little bit of salad history.
Okay.
All right. So here we go. We have National Salad Month. That's the month of May. There is a National Egg Salad Week the week after Easter.
A whole week?
Yeah, an entire week all about egg salad.
So much egg salad.
It's a lot. And then there's National Caesar Salad Day, July 4th.
Oh, makes me feel patriotic.
So let's start with National Salad Month.
Okay.
So this month was created in 1992 by the Association for Dressings and Sauces. So yes, there is a board.
Come on.
They've actually been around since 1926, and they were formed to represent the manufacturers of salad dressing, mayonnaise, condiment sauces, and other suppliers of raw materials for dressings and sauces. And you can visit their website at dressings-sauces.org in case you would like to learn some more.
I can just hear the keys. I can just hear the keyboard. Everybody is just Googling furiously.
Yeah, clack away.
Clack, 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 clack. 1926.
It's been around for a while.
Yeah.
Actually, this is the 95th anniversary of the Association for Dressings and Sauces. It's been governed by a board of directors. They have working committees. And one of those committees is called the Horseradish Information Council.
For all your burning horseradish queries.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's like an executive committee. I think there's a packaging committee.
Sure.
One that covers technology in this particular category. And then there's horseradish. I don't know why it gets its own committee. I guess it's super special. I don't know if like that's the committee you want to be in.
Right. I can see that.
They put me on horseradish.
Man, you if you're going to be on a committee, you want to be horseradish. We do nothing. We do nothing.
We don't do anything.
It's great.
These meeting minutes, they're back from 1926. We haven't done anything since
Just
then.
Change the date.
Mm-hmm.
Just change
all
the
we
date.
Do.
That's interesting because horseradish is definitely like not everybody is down with horseradish.
Yeah.
Like olive oil, you know, Caesar dressing. Most people are cool with that, but horseradish is specific.
That's right. People can be really picky about it. It's a, you know, it's a very strong flavor.
Yeah.
So
maybe that's why it needs a committee, you know,
maybe
to find new converts to the horse radish lifestyle.
They need to like go the way of kale, right? Somebody's got to come figure out how do we make horseradish super cool and hip.
Yeah.
And something that I discovered during my research of the Association for Dressings and Sauces is that year when they were founded, 1926, happens to be the same year that Hellman's Blue Ribbon Mayonnaise got its trademark and really exploded in popularity. So there were a lot of new condiments rising up at that time. So it makes sense that maybe, you know, with things like Hellman's getting really popular, that there would be an association formed, you know, that would probably bring awareness and marketing to all of these new sauces and dressings.
Okay.
Now, here's a little something interesting about Hellman's. So, Anna, you might appreciate this and also get a little upset about it.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
All right. Let's
Brace
hear
yourself.
It.
So Hellman's is named for the founder, Richard Hellman, who was a German businessman, but the mayo and actually the whole food business was from his wife, Margaret.
What?
Yeah. So Richard moved to New York City and he married Margaret, and her parents owned a deli. Mm-hmm. And they had all of these recipes for salads and sauces and condiments and dressings and mayo. And so Richard actually married into the food industry, and it was Margaret and her mayo that became big.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. But everywhere that you look, you know, they attribute Hellman's to Richard Hellman. And there's a couple of sites that did say that Margaret made the mayo. Margaret had the recipe.
Margaret just, you know, whatever, invented the thing. Oh my God, that's so annoying.
Yeah, because she was the one, and it was her family that had the whole deli to begin with.
What a dick. But
That Richard. What a dick.
Well, no, I mean, like, okay, so did they go into the business together? Like, her name was maybe also Hellman. Like, did they go on and run this business together with her recipes?
So they did start this business, I guess, kind of together. Richard gets the credit for it. But here's something else that's interesting. He got his citizenship in 1920 because he was a German immigrant.
Okay. After they were married.
After they were married. And then Margaret died in 1922.
What?
And then he got the trademark for Hellman's after she died.
Well, well, well. Mm-hmm.
And he remarried not too long after Margaret passed away.
Hmm.
I just keep thinking of our poisons episode.
I've got a murder board forming in my head.
Me too. Oh. Is it just that we've watched so many murder shows that now we're like, oh, something must have happened?
I think murder shows combined with we've seen how sleazy like these titans of industry are. So
right.
Like, was it bootstraps or did he poison his wife?
Mm-hmm.
That's where we are now.
He put something in the mayo.
What did he put in the mayo?
Arsenic. That seemed to be the poison of choice back then. But it is pretty crazy that every time we see Hellman's or Hellman's Blue Ribbon Mayonnaise, we always get Richard Hellman.
Sure.
You know, listed as the founder.
That's what I thought.
And then if you look, he'd really married into the mayonnaise recipe.
That's
because
so
it all
annoying.
Came from Margaret and her family.
It's like an Ella Kellogg situation all over again.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
Whose recipes for the cereal were they? Huh? So the next time you slather some mayo on a sandwich, think of Margaret.
Mm-hmm.
Say thank you, Margaret.
Thanks, Margaret.
I'm sorry you were murdered.
Speaking of mayo, National Egg Salad Week is the week after Easter.
Oh, gross.
Did you celebrate this year, Anna?
No, gross, no.
We don't know who started this week, but if you check out the American Egg Board website, they do offer a bunch of different egg salad recipes on there to help you celebrate this week. And of course, it kind of makes sense that the week after Easter is when you would have egg salad week.
Yeah, you got all those hard-boiled eggs sitting
exactly.
around.
That's right, because people are scrambling to figure out what to do with their dyed Easter eggs so that they don't go to waste.
Oh, I love it. We need a little ding. We need a little
every
ding
time.
Chime every time that we
have
lay out a
have
pun.
A pun. Yeah. So the egg board was actually created by an act of Congress in 1976.
Ooh, one of the
to
legit
bring together
ones.
America's egg farmers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is legit. And National Egg Salad Week is a promotion now that they have.
So how do they spread it over a week?
They
Are
come
there
up
different
with just...
events? Is it a festival?
There should be a festival, except I don't know. I feel like if you're eating egg salad on day five,
no,
you probably will die.
Yeah, no. Look, Easter Sunday. By Wednesday, move on.
Yeah.
Move on.
That egg salad, just toss it. It's gone. It's done. So gear up, guys, because Egg Salad Week 2022 is going to be exceptional. Excellent. Exciting.
Last one who celebrates is a rotten egg.
Oh!
Oh!
And the third salad holiday that we're talking about is National Caesar Salad Day on the 4th of July.
I do love me a Caesar salad.
I do like a Caesar salad. I think it's because it's got that crispy romaine.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a little bite
there's
to it.
There's a zest. Mm-hmm. Zest in there.
Caesar salad's pretty darn good.
It's pretty
now,
good.
Now, I always used to think that Caesar salad had something to do with Julius Caesar.
Really?
I mean, yeah, I just figured, oh, it must have come from the Romans, like all of the other food that we talk about.
Yeah, all of them come from the Romans. Or The Romans wrote it down.
They wrote it down.
One or the other.
Mm-hmm. But no, Caesar salad. It's called a Caesar salad because it's named after a guy named Caesar who had a restaurant in Tijuana.
Back to Tijuana.
Yeah, guys, we're going back to Tijuana.
But this time for salad.
Yeah. I think people, when they were like, I got to go to Tijuana for salad, wink, wink, that was probably the excuse they used to use. So they didn't feel like, ooh, we're going there for something bad.
Yeah. Or maybe they'd spent, you know, people have been on a bender for days in Satan's playground. And then they're like, man, I just got to eat a salad.
Ugh, that's true.
Something light. Caesar, what do you got?
Yep. That's where Caesar came to the rescue.
We're just inventing backstories now for foods. That's where we are.
I like it. There's so many backstories, though. We really don't know.
Sure.
What's the
And
the
ones that we do know, some of them are lame. So why not just make
Let's
up
just make
ones.
Our own. So this story goes that in 1924 in Tijuana, it happened to be a really busy 4th of July weekend at Cesar Cardini's restaurant. And it was so busy that he started to run really low on food. So he put together salads using whatever ingredients were left, which happened to be romaine lettuce, some garlic, parm, croutons, boiled eggs, olive oil, Worcestershire sauce, just anything.
Sure.
And to make this salad seem a little bit high-end and delicious, he added some drama to it by preparing it tableside for his guests.
Ooh, he put on a show.
He put on a whole show with the salad.
Nice.
He would spread the romaine lettuce flat on a plate, which actually is kind of a genius way to take up space and not use so many ingredients.
Oh,
just
yeah, well,
fan them out.
Isn't that what you did when you were a kid? You didn't want to finish all your food? You just sort of spread it out
on
the plate?
Yep.
Same idea.
Caesar's been doing that since 1924. And then he would drizzle the dressing on top and you were supposed to eat it with your fingers. So there was a lot of theater with the salad.
Sure.
So in addition to driving to Tijuana, driving to Satan's Playground to escape Prohibition, it seemed like folks were driving there for the Caesar salad too.
Uh-huh.
It was a fashionable thing to go get.
Well, it is. You did say 1926, right?
Yeah.
So that's totally Prohibition time.
Uh-huh.
So it could have been both.
It could have been both. It was so popular, Julia Child even wrote about going to Caesar's restaurant
Aww.
With her parents in the mid-1920s to experience this theater of tableside salad prep. And she said she was so intrigued by the fact that he would put coddled eggs into this salad mix. She'd just never really seen that before. But I think it's pretty cool that even Julia Child got to experience the real Caesar salad being made.
Mm-hmm. But was she like, but you should probably make it with a blowtorch.
That's a callback.
Blowtorch. It's all you need.
All you need.
And then in 1936, after the Volstead Act, Prohibition being repealed, Caesar closed the Tijuana business and moved to San Diego to start a new restaurant.
Oh.
And then in the late 30s, the family ended up moving to Los Angeles to really focus on the production and marketing of the now very popular Caesar dressing. So it just, the dressing stood out so much that they ended up really putting 100% of their business into the production of this delicious new dressing.
They put all their eggs in that basket?
They sure did. So when Caesar died in the 1950s, it was his daughter, Rosa Maria Cardini, who took over the family business. And she was the one who patented the Caesar dressing.
Oh.
So Rosa Maria Cardini really made the Caesar dressing kind of what it is today and what we see as an eater and consumer. And by the way, Anna, you actually live pretty close to Caesar Cardini Foods.
I do?
Mm-hmm. It's located in Culver City.
Oh my gosh, so am I.
Yeah. So you should go try to find the Caesar dressing factory, the distribution plant.
Oh man, I bet they have a cool tour. I
bet they do.
Like a bottling tour.
Mm.
Just see giant vats of salad dressing.
Yep.
I used to love doing those when I was a kid and you go on the field trip to the whatever factory.
Oh yeah.
Man, so cool.
Those were the best.
Yeah.
You'd see stuff getting like labeled, like bottles rolling down a conveyor
all
belt.
The machines.
Like the label, like, yeah.
All the funnels that just like shot whatever product into the bottle.
Mm-hmm. Like, how did they do that? It's pretty amazing.
See, even from a young age, we wanted to know the backstory. We wanted to know where things came from. And look at us now.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And another classic salad is the Waldorf salad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the salad with a little bit of a fruity twist to it because it's got apples.
I like
That's
that salad.
I like
the
it.
Walnuts and the cheese and the apples. I like it.
Yeah. I like the crispiness of it.
Mm-hmm.
I like having a crunch with the salad.
And the mixed flavors, the sweet with the tart.
Mm-hmm. And credit for the Waldorf salad is given to a man named Oscar Michel Cherqui.
Cherqui.
Cherqui. Okay. I thought it was Chersky, but I think it's just Chersky.
Chersky. There's not nearly enough vowels in that name.
I know. Well, I'm going to call him Oscar. So Oscar.
Let's go with that.
Yeah, he was the maître d'hôtel. So basically, he kind of ran the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. And it said that he made this salad for a private party that was actually celebrating the pre-opening of the hotel back in the 1890s. And Oscar worked there till the 1940s. So it kind of became Oscar's thing, the hotel thing. Yeah.
Nice. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Of course, there are so many ways to make a salad. You can make it your own way. We talked about going to the salad bar, having control of what you wanted on it. But one easy way to make your salad stand out is through the dressings. I mean, that's pretty much what Caesar did, was create like a really distinct dressing that makes, you know, everything like so much more different than the Waldorf salad.
Well, it's where pretty much all the flavor comes from most of the time.
Exactly.
So you really want to invest in the R&D of your dressing.
Yes.
If you want your salad to take off.
That is true. When salads started to grow in popularity in the 1900s, the local greens that were being used were typically bitter greens, like a chicory or watercress. So you needed something to kind of cut down that bitterness. And it turned out that mayo was a great way to do that. It helped, you know, add a little bit of creaminess to it, cut out the bitterness of some of these greens. And that's where you have these mayo-based dressings start to pop up. And one of them...
I was just imagining somebody like slathering their lettuce with mayo. And being like, good enough.
This works.
They were simple folk in the 1920s.
They were. One of the dressings that popped up in the 1920s was Thousand Island dressing. So Thousand Island is that mayo-based dressing. Has olive oil, lemon, orange juice in it, mustard, vinegar. It's definitely creamy. There's a little bit of chili sauce, tomato puree.
Okay.
Pinkish hint. You can put ketchup in it or Tabasco sauce if you want it to have a little bit more of a kick.
Nice.
And it usually has a bunch of finely chopped ingredients in there as well, like pickles, bell peppers, green olives. And Thousand Island has a really interesting story behind it, because the person who is credited with inventing it is also Oscar from the Waldorf.
What?
Yeah.
Oscar gets around.
Mm-hmm. He really does.
But wait, there's an area of New York State not far from where I grew up in Buffalo called the Thousand Islands.
Yes.
Is it related to that?
Yes, it is.
Amazing.
So Oscar was working at a place called Bolt Castle in the Thousand Islands region.
Okay.
And the man who ran it, George Bolt, had Oscar, you know, work as a chef at his castle, his hotel. And
I don't remember there being a castle.
I think it's more like a, looks more like a resort than an actual castle.
Just want to clarify.
Yeah.
When I would go there as a child, did not spy a castle.
But yes, Oscar was working at this place, and he had created this dressing for the salads and then went on to work at the Waldorf. So who knows? It's interesting that Oscar is mentioned in both of these stories. Oscar's also credited with Eggs Benedict. So
what?
Oscar just has a great publicist. I don't know.
Or Oscar knows his sauce.
Oscar does know the sauce.
Oscar's got the secret sauce.
He does. There is another origin story that says it was created by a woman in the area named Sophia Lalonde, who happened to be an innkeeper in Clayton, New York.
All right. Well, I'm just going to assume that a man stole it from a woman.
Oscar stole it.
Yeah. I mean, if there's like, well, some people think this woman made it. I'm like, she did.
Mm-hmm. She probably did.
We got a track record here.
Yeah. And there are even more stories. There are just like a ton of claims about the origin of Thousand Island dressing. And apparently some of these stories are just so intriguing that a couple of filmmakers decided to investigate.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Is this salad true crime?
It is salad true crime.
Oh, my God.
So we have Eric Roberts and Andrea Reeves. And together they produced a PBS documentary in 2012 called The Mysterious Origins of Thousand Island Dressing.
Wait, Eric Roberts, like Julia's brother?
No.
Oh. Damn it.
Although that would have been really crazy.
That would have been a great twist.
Mm-mm. Different Eric Roberts.
All right, fine.
Yeah.
Carry on.
But here's the trailer for their food mystery.
Travel with us now to one of the most beautiful places in the world, the fabulous Thousand Islands, bordering northern New York and Canada, and the birthplace of Thousand Island dressing.
Or was it? We are about to examine the evidence to determine the mysterious origin of Thousand Island dressing. Thousand Island dressing is one of the most popular condiments in the world. And the legends of how this famous salad dressing was created at the turn of the 20th century are cloaked in intrigue. Tales of tragic love, fame and riches, working class ingenuity, shocking racism, and smoldering sensuality make this a tasty mystery to devour. Please join us now as we uncover the clues and seek to solve the mysterious origin of Thousand Island dressing.
But something interesting about Thousand Island dressing is how its use went beyond salads, and it ended up becoming known as the secret sauce at fast food joints and diners, like the In-N-Out Burger and McDonald's.
That's the spread.
You've got the spread at In-N-Out Burger, and you have the Big Mac sauce at McDonald's, and it's basically Thousand Island dressing. But I love how salad has just evolved over time, from basically being a bunch of greens that Romans would just salt and oil, you know, a very old-timey classic garden salad, to getting fancier during the Renaissance as people started to experiment with adding things to the greens, like meat. And then in modern times, seeing the rise of dressings and other condiments and toppings being put on salads, and even salads coming to us in dessert form. Like fruit salad, the ambrosia salad with marshmallows on it. I still don't get that. It's weird. And Jell-O salad. Jell-O salad, by the way, guys, is the official state salad of Utah. So that's something for you to put in your pocket for trivia night.
What is it?
It's literally just like Jell-O with stuff in it.
We used to do like a Jell-O mold with fruit in it.
Yeah.
But this
is like a fruity salad. But then they also have like a creamy version. Like
No, it stops being a salad at some point. There's a fine line between just casserole and salad.
And the, right.
Yeah, no, salads are incredibly versatile.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, they can be as hearty as we want them to be. But it's crazy that when we think of salads, we associate them as a health food.
Oh, yeah.
Even the quesadilla one.
Right?
So, Anna, you're going to tell us more about this attitude and kind of this evolution in history about salads as health food in your deep dish.
It's fraught.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get into it when we come back to the deep dish. A few episodes ago in our barbecue episode, I sort of casually asked, why do men get fire and meat and we get salad, right?
Good question.
When it came time to do this salad episode, I was like, well, why don't I try to answer that?
Yeah. Why don't you?
Why don't I? I shall. We've started talking about gendering food in past episodes, which we'll talk about. We're really building on that idea. So we have some of those answers, but salad is very specific.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So we said a little bit earlier, salad has a brand
and
its image is that it's something light and healthy and diety, even though they're not necessarily healthy and diety. Like if you put quesadilla croutons on them.
Right.
There's also a positive moral judgment of them being kind of virtuous and responsible to choose ordering a salad. But there's also the judgment that they are boring, joyless, and lame.
Yeah.
We have this sort of cultural agreement that people order salad not because that's what they really want, but because they think they should.
Yeah, I should just stick with salad.
Right. And unless it's piled on with other stuff, we don't really think of it as a full meal, right? It's like an appetizer or a side dish or not food fit for humans, right? We call it like rabbit food.
Yes, I hear people say that all the time. Oh, I'm just nibbling on rabbit food.
And that's why you hear the word just used all the time with salad. I'll just have a salad. I'm just going to get a salad.
Yeah.
So a big part of the reason why we think salad is dumb and steak is awesome is because we have gendered them.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a clip from our episode, Oh My Gourd, Becky, It's Pumpkin Season, where I introduce the idea of gendering food.
We gender food all the time, whether we realize it or not. Things that are sweet, light, are considered feminine.
Right.
And things that are like savory and harsh are considered masculine. So if you think about rosé versus, you know, IPA.
Yeah.
One is considered very feminine. One is considered more masculine.
Mm-hmm.
And food trends are like most trends where if there's something that a lot of women like, it's seen as shallow, childish, and without merit.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Girly means silly.
Yep.
So not just food. If you think about like chick flicks.
Yeah.
But if men like things, it's seen as complex. and serious and strong.
Right. Yeah.
So like we don't call barbecue or brewing craft beer at home or these masculine, like male food trends basic. Right. Although I would argue that brewing craft beer at home is pretty basic.
Oh man, I brew craft beer.
Oh no. A journalist named Jaya Saxena wrote a fantastic article in Taste Magazine about how we gender and judge food. Mm. And she summed it up by saying, when men like something, they elevate it. When women like something, they ruin it.
Oh, that's interesting.
And the pumpkin spice is very much aimed at women. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen women wearing shirts that are like pumpkin spice everything. I don't see dudes wearing that shirt. I'd love to see a dude wearing a shirt that says like PSL or die.
Yeah.
Right. And we can see that salad follows this principle of anything associated as feminine is less than.
Yeah.
And by the way, we talk about it like what we said, just. The word just mm-hmm. means less than. And if something's associated with women, it's just open season to shit on it.
Mm.
But we also talked about how part of the definition of masculinity, or specifically toxic masculinity, means defining manliness by the absence or the oppositeness to femininity.
Right.
So what's really funny is I was looking for all this stuff about women and salad, and I did find some. But because we've labeled salad as feminine, I found way more stuff actually about men bashing salad, like
what?
As a concept.
Huh.
Right? Like stating their manliness as hating salad, which sounds insane, and it is. So do you remember, Leah, in the bacon episode, listeners, if you remember, I played a bunch of just traumatizingly sexist commercials.
Oh my gosh. How could I forget? They were horrible.
And one of them was called I Am Man. It was a Burger King commercial for the Texas Double Whopper with bacon. And it starts off with a guy looking down at his plate and sees that he has a small salad and he's just fed up. He's over it. He's not going to live like this. And he starts singing and he says, I'm way too hungry to settle for chick food. And then it all escalates and somehow ends with them pushing a minivan
right.
off an overpass.
Yeah, they start rioting in the streets.
And I think it's supposed to be funny, but I feel like a lot of people would watch that and be like, yeah, I am too hungry to settle for chick food.
I need a Texas Double Whopper with bacon.
Without bacon, it's just gay. But think about that. I'm too hungry to settle for chick food.
Yep.
And by the way, the reverse doesn't exist. There's nothing out there that's like, I'm too much woman to eat a ribeye. Like, there's nothing out there. But salad wasn't always considered feminine.
Oh.
In an article I read from JSTOR called When Salad Was Manly AF. So it describes how in the mid-20th century, real salad and real cooking was seen as something only men could do.
Hmm.
So I'm just going to read you some quotes
okay.
that they give from cookbooks and cooking columns from that time, which are named things like A Man and His Meals and The Wolf in Chef's Clothing.
Oh.
An author named Eels Brody, who wrote a long-running column called Man in the Kitchenette in Esquire magazine. In a 1940 installment, he wrote, salads are really the man's department. Only a man can make a perfect salad, which is never sweet and fussy like a woman's.
Sweet That's right. and fussy like a woman's.
Sweet and, I don't know what a fussy
yeah,
salad is.
Yeah, what is a fussy salad?
In his 1946 cookbook, That Man in the Kitchen, author Malcolm LaPrade says, I promise you that you can become the envy of all your neighbors' wives. You will not only make things like mother used to make, but far better. And furthermore, you will at last attain a complete independence of women folk, which every red-blooded male desires. And then Playboy's Gourmet.
Oh.
Food writer Mario Thomas wrote, when your back is turned, a woman will come up with prunes and cottage cheese or pea and walnut salad. Or an elaborate bowl of mixed greens tasting exactly like a bale of wet hay. A good salad maker must have meticulousness, patience, cleanliness, and a very alert sense of touch and taste. For some reason, it takes a man to master this really fine art.
Jesus, Mario!
Yeah.
Wow. I'm just picturing, like, creeping up on a dude with a bunch of prunes and cottage cheese. He's like, take
and
that!
And then you throw it in his salad and you're like, ha-ha! Run away.
Gotcha.
I mean, reading those, I was just like, Jesus, no wonder the daughters of those guys who were reading those cookbooks 25 years later were like, fuck this.
Uh-huh.
Burning my bra. I'm marching on Washington.
Right. I'm done.
So we've seen examples, right, like salad and bacon, of how food gets gendered, but mm-hmm. we have very specific and intense ideas of how men and women should eat.
Ah.
So here's another clip from our episode, Bacon Makes It Better, where I talk about this. So food advertising has always exploited the worst aspects of our gender constructs. It tells women that we should eat daintily and be mm-hmm. health conscious, which means weight conscious.
Yeah.
And eat less than we need. But it tells men that they should eat a lot and eat these heavy foods, don't care about your health, foods that'll make them bigger,
yeah,
more food than what they need. And this reminded me of the work of Judith Butler. So here's my gender theory moment, everyone. You knew it was coming.
All right.
Judith Butler is an American philosopher, gender theorist, queer theorist. You probably all read her in your intro to gender studies mm-hmm. classes in college and everything. One of her core theories is that gender is essentially a performance. Mm. It's the things that you do. So she talks about acts, movements, sort of enactments
uh-huh.
that we've associated with a gender. And then we learn,
yeah,
internalize, and repeat them. So we like perform them mm-hmm. to signify to everyone else around us what gender we associate with.
Right.
And she theorized that this is why gender can be fluid.
Because it's a performance. We can change that. We can do
exactly. Mm-hmm. You can change that and how it can change over time, because our definition of what was feminine and masculine changes over time and we just naturally adapt.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an esoteric version of RuPaul's famous quote, "We're born naked and the rest is drag."
That's such a good quote.
She's my other favorite gender theorist, RuPaul. So eating, you know, is kind of a performance too.
Yeah, that's true.
Gendering our eating styles has a function, and it functions to reinforce our cultural definitions and expectations of what we consider masculine and feminine to be in that culture in that moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
So one part of our gender constructs, obviously, that salad represents is a focus on women's appearance and women's looks, and specifically their weight.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of evidence that women really internalize this and process it and continue to perform it. So dating advice for a long time was that women should eat at home first so that you eat something really small on a date to signify to the man that you were, you know, healthy and weight conscious and dainty, but really like that you won't get fat.
Uh-huh.
I feel like that's what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
It's like, don't worry, I won't get fat.
Don't worry.
The second you put a ring on it. And there's a ton of studies that show that women eat less when they're eating with men. They actually eat less food.
Whoa!
Including a 2011 study by scientist Molly Allen O'Donnell, who found that women ate, on average, 112 calories less when dining with men than when they were alone or with other women.
Whoa!
Part of this performance, and I'm 100% guilty of doing this. I don't know, Leah, if you've experienced this, but like women do this dance about food when we're eating together, of sort of framing everything that we're choosing and eating around like our weight, whether we're being good or bad.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. And then using mm-hmm. eating as just a total excuse to shit on ourselves and our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite articles written about this was in the New York Times called Smash the Wellness Industry by novelist Jessica Knoll. And in it, she tells this anecdote. A few months ago, I had lunch with the writer behind one of my favorite movies of the year, the agent who made the deal, and the producer who backed the project. I wanted to hear all about the process and perhaps find an opportunity to collaborate. When the server came to take our order, I flashed to that scene in Romy and Michelle's high school reunion when Mira Sorvino walks into a diner in a striped skirt suit and asks the waitress, "Do you have some sort of businesswoman special?" Had there been any sort of businesswoman special that day, our group probably couldn't have ordered it. Someone was slogging through the Whole 30 program. Someone had eliminated dairy. Someone else was simply trying to be good after a bad weekend. The producer said it didn't matter how good she was. She had lost the baby weight, and though she may look tolerable in clothes, under the Spanx, her stomach was a horror show. The writer said she had so much cellulite on her thighs, she looked diseased. I gazed around the restaurant longingly, wondering what the men eating cheeseburgers were talking about.
Ooh, that's tough, and it's so true. We
so
do
real.
That.
Mm-hmm. And the thing about that story is like, what are the men talking about? They're talking business. Like they're,
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe not. Actually, probably they're talking about baseball. But
but we know they're definitely not saying
anything about their thighs.
No.
No.
Mm-mm.
This is another way that we internalize all these messages and then we just keep them going by doing them to ourselves. So the whole article is amazing. We'll link to it in the show notes if you want to read it. So there's the whole thing about looks, but then, like I said, there's this bigger thing of women being smaller and restricting them, taking up less space, and men being bigger and taking up more space. And that message is kind of all around us in these really weird ways.
Oh, yeah.
So diets and workouts kind of feel like one category, right? But when you break it down, all the ones aimed at women focus on deprivation and becoming smaller. It's about cutting calories, giving up foods, losing weight.
Mm-hmm.
But male-directed diets and workouts focus on building muscle, bulking up, eating large quantities of rich foods, and generally becoming bigger, stronger, and taking up more space.
Yeah.
Getting swole.
My gains.
Right. But another place that this shows up a lot is in the way we talk about money.
Oh.
Yeah. So according to Elvest, 73% of financial advice articles aimed at men emphasize investing and growing wealth, whereas 90% of financial advice articles aimed at women, 90% focus on savings and cutting their spending. They all have this attitude of like, you must be overspending, women be shopping, etc.
Right.
And I swear to God, the examples of things that they tell women they need to cut back on are, well, they're not like get more efficient light bulbs. It's not cut your cable subscription, right? They're specifically like feminine things.
Oh.
Like give up your hair care products, mani-pedis, and I shit you not, pumpkin spice lattes.
What?
Right?
Oh my God. That's
but they're
crazy.
Literally saying, like, girl stuff isn't necessary. Like, stop buying it.
Right.
And your PSLs.
And your PSLs. Get rid of that.
Get rid of it.
That's so true, though. It's always like, I guess that's why couponing is so directed at women. Like, you've got to save money this way. Look for discounts and deals.
But then with men, it's like, you know, invest in real estate. And with women, it's like, sell all these leggings online.
Right.
Like
join our MLM.
Right? Essential oils.
Yeah.
All the essential oils. Ladies. But the thing is, we can't win. We can't win. It's a trap. It's a trap. We try to do everything right, but we can't. So we might order salad in order to adhere to these cultural expectations of being thin or restricting or, you know, being attractive and dainty. But just the fact that salad has been labeled as feminine has had so many negative attributes connected to it, and that guys have to prove their manliness by showing disdain for it means that oftentimes women are judged really, really harshly for ordering the salad.
We can't win.
We can't win. There is so much stuff on the internet that's like, ugh, I hate it when women order salads. Like, a real woman can eat a double cheeseburger, but like, no fatties.
Oh my
no
gosh.
Fat, no uggos. The idealized perfect woman can eat a whole pizza, but still be a size two.
Yeah.
But you know, it's just like the financial advice, which is be beautiful. Don't have a, you know, one hair on your body. Wear great clothes, but don't spend any money on it.
Oh, don't expect me to go to Supercuts and look great when I come out.
Right? So I found an article in Cosmo called 14 Things Guys Think About Your Salad. And it was written by a gentleman named Cosmo Frank, who's supposed to be giving a guy's perspective. And the first time I saw that, I was like Cosmo Kramer?
That's what I was thinking. And boy, if they're related.
Okay, so real quick before I read this, just some background on Cosmo Frank. His bio on the website says, I am a human male that enjoys consuming meals consisting of all five food groups and fulfilling every level of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I write about sex having.
All right,
the fact that you just wrote sex having makes me feel like maybe I'm going to take your column with a grain of salt.
This seems like an AI wrote the bio, you know? They're like feeding it information about men, and then they're like, yeah, write like, bio.
Douchebag.ai
yep.
wrote this. All right, ready?
Okay.
Great, this date is already over. Ordering a salad on the first date is like ordering water at a bar. That's not even a real meal. It's garnish for other meals. Can you at least admit you're just eating accoutrement? My grandma used to order salads all the time. I thought it was just because she had soft teeth. Do you have soft teeth?
What?
Are you just going to settle for that? You're going to be hungry again in half an hour. I know we're going to be stopping at Burger King on the way home. Do you want me to just call ahead and have two bacon cheeseburgers waiting for us? You're going to eat half my food later, aren't you? So, like, really nasty.
Yeah. Cosmo Frank? Ugh.
Cosmo, if you want to get to the sex having, just let her eat the salad in peace.
Wow.
But right, you hear the disdain, the just, the settle for, the alternative, which is double cheeseburgers waiting for them.
Yep.
And this sort of feminine style of eating that we're talking about here is obviously the opposite of the masculine style of eating because, again, we define masculinity as the opposite of femininity. And science will back me up. In that same study from 2011 by Molly Allen O'Donnell, she found that when men were eating with women, they ate on average 210 calories more than when they were with men or on their own.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, by the way, even though the study pointed out that this is problematic in both directions, the summary article that I read about this only chastised the women.
What?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. It was like, come on, ladies, like, get over yourselves. Eat a burger. We know that's what you want. But it wasn't like, hey, man, stop eating like a freaking caveman.
Oh, my. This is so terrible.
Because, again, the female style is deemed bad.
Oh,
even
my
though
goodness.
The male style is just as unhealthy. Another study by Cornell University from 2015 studied people eating at a local pizza joint. And they found that when they were with a woman, male diners ate 93% more pizza or 1.5 more slices of pizza than if they were with other men or alone.
What? That's...
And the researchers attributed this to like a sense of competition with other partners or that like excessive eating showed strength and virility. But they pointed out that this was like very much a self-own. Because if you keep doing that, your health and virility are going to go way out the window.
Yeah.
So I feel the need to say, if there's any men still listening to this, if there are, kudos. Just as a public service announcement, we don't need this.
No.
We don't need you to do this.
Mm-mm.
This is like in the same category as the dick pics, like the unsolicited dick pics. Like, we're good. It's not doing what you think it's doing. However, I'm making this so much worse. In that study, the Cornell University study, the women actually didn't eat more. But when they had eaten with men, they reported much more negative feelings about themselves and the food after they had eaten. And they overestimated how much they had eaten.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
They thought they ate too much.
They ate too much. Yeah. They felt they, you know, expressed shame and guilt over eating when it was with the dude. Which, like, if you've just watched a guy eat 4 slices of pizza, why are you feeling bad about yourself?
Yeah.
But, like, it's not just a performance when guys eat in front of women. There's also a performative aspect to guys eating in front of guys. So do you remember the article I found about how men eat that I read to you last time? Or have you blacked it out?
I think I remember a little bit of it.
Well, I'll just play it for you.
Okay.
I read in a men's magazine an article called How Men Eat, : It's Different from Women, It Just Is. If you want an example of that, defining masculinity as the opposite of femininity. And it had quotes from guys that said things like, a real man doesn't cut a burger in half. I gotta say, that seems so stressful, like to have your whole identity and your gender hinging on whether you cut a burger in half or not. That feels like a lot of pressure.
That is.
Also, men eat as competition. We eat on dares. We eat the hottest pepper to show our strength. Okay. And my favorite, I don't particularly enjoy sharing, except with a woman, and then only on the first 2 dates or any wedding anniversary after the 10th. And Leah, I gotta say,
how is he still married?
I was gonna say, I find it very difficult to believe that this guy got to a 10th anniversary or even a second date.
Yeah, that's that doesn't fly.
These guys all write these big things and then they go home and they're like, I love you, yes dear, whatever you want dear.
Mom's got dinner ready. Mother,
thank you for the salad, mother.
One day I'll be able to make a salad better than mother's.
Mother, I never want another woman. I'll never find another woman who can make a salad like you, Mother.
Oh, man, my Mike Pence impression is getting really good. Remember him?
Oh, my gosh, I had forgotten about him.
Oh, it's better that way. So we've established women reinforce these eating standards by sort of collectively shitting on ourselves. But manly eating is really enforced through competition and sort of social pressure from other men, which you heard in those quotes that passed down and just read. And this is so real.
Uh-huh.
This is so real that Dixie Plates Company, paper plates company.
Yeah.
They did a whole ad campaign called hashtag salad shaming, literally to tell men to stop bullying each other for eating salad. So here's part of the campaign, an ad spot called We the Salad Men.
Every barbecue season, men everywhere are made to feel like lesser men for eating salad. It's called salad shaming. And it's driving a wedge between us. But if you want a salad, eat a salad. Maybe it's your third barbecue this weekend. Maybe you're just going through a thing. Or maybe you just want some damn endive. Salad men, Dixie is here for you this summer. With plates and bowls built to hold up all kinds of salads. Frisée, niçoise, whatever this is. So let us come together and eat salads with our dude friends. With no regrets, just vinaigrettes. Stand up to salad shaming this summer and join your meat-eating friends at the table.
So this whole thing of femininity being wrapped up in salad, or salads being wrapped up in femininity and associated with women, persisted so much that it kind of ended up in stock photography.
Oh, uh-huh.
And then those stock photos made their way into a meme.
Oh, I know this meme. This was wild.
On January 3rd, 2011, a post appeared on a women-focused satire and sort of general interest site called The Hairpin. It was a post by the founder, Edith Zimmerman, and this post was called Women Laughing Alone with Salad. It was not an article. There was no text. It was just that headline and then like 20 stock photos of women alone with salad, just laughing maniacally.
Uh-huh.
And they were women eating salad at a dinner table, in the kitchen, on the couch. One woman sitting in a meadow, obvs. And one is sitting on an exercise ball in a gym. Sometimes you just break from Pilates and can't wait to get outside. Gotta eat the salad right there. One is sitting in an armchair on a sidewalk.
Like when you throw out an old sofa?
Yeah, or it's moving day. One's on the beach, and there are several that are just in blank voids. Just nothing around them, right? And this immediately went viral because it was so ridiculous, but so relatable.
Mm-hmm.
When they were all put together like that, it just made it so obvious how insane these are. But also, there's so many of them.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's not the end, those 20 pictures. And that same day, a Tumblr blog,
mm-hmm.
same name, was launched. People added to it for 7 years.
Wow.
So that original post has been shared literally millions of times. And, you know, I printed it out and I put it on my wall.
Oh.
And I've been looking at it as sort of like a, you know, inspo, a little vision board, mood board for this episode. And these pictures are so sinister.
Mm-hmm.
They are so creepy. It's funny. And then you keep looking at it and it makes you sadder and sadder. And the thing that is so sinister to me is them being happy about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they're eating this flavorless thing, and none of them are eating great looking salads. There's no quesadilla explosion salads happening. They're all
what?
Just like sad lettuce, maybe a tomato. It's just like not enough fuel for their body, and it certainly doesn't have any flavor and isn't going to give you any joy. They're alone,
right? That's
they're
weird.
Not with anyone. There's no support. There's no community. They're not doing anything. They're mm-hmm. just totally passive, and they're happy about it.
Ugh.
The smiles, the laughs, like that is just this whole message of like, deprive yourself, do without, restrict, and be happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
It creeps me out so much. And I felt like this meme is the equivalent of men telling women to smile.
It's like telling a woman you need to perform happiness and be pleasing to look at while you're degrading her.
Deprive yourself, but smile about it.
This meme is referenced all the time in articles about women, food, and representation. There have been a ton of think pieces written about it. There's spinoffs and parodies calling out other sexist tropes in stock photography, like my favorite, women struggling to drink water. In 2015, Sheryl Sandberg, the Facebook exec and founder of leanin.org, partnered with Getty Images to create a whole new library of stock photos specifically showing more modern and egalitarian images of women and families. And I don't know if this was directly a result of the meme, but I'm confident that it was at least influenced by the conversations around it.
Wow.
Actually, my favorite thing that came from this meme that is super weird and awesome was from Sheila Callahan. So Sheila Callahan is a playwright and a screenwriter. She's written plays like Fever Dream and That Pretty Pretty or The Rape Play and on TV shows like Shameless and Casual.
Huh.
She wrote a whole play based on this meme.
What?
Yeah. She wrote a whole play based on this meme. Women Laughing Alone with Salad, the play. Premiered March 6, 2016 at the Kirk Douglas Theater, which is also just down the street from me.
I used to walk
here in
past
Culver
that
City
all the time. Yes.
I know. I got this. I got Caesar salad.
I know. You're just surrounded by all of the greatest things.
And how she got from this meme to a full-fledged play on stage is super fascinating. So here is Sheila talking about her process.
It started with these images from stock photography websites of women with giant bowls of salad and yoga gear looking very healthy and laughing maniacally and hilariously over their hugely unappetizing bowls of like iceberg lettuce. And that started me thinking, well, who are these women and what are they selling and why are we buying these images? And is it supposed to be aspirational? Or I just had a lot of thoughts in my head about it. So I wrote the play based on those images. And this is just basically a look at how females in advertising are exploited by the media and what the expectations we put on ourselves as women are based on those images. And actually, the main character's a guy and how he is warped by the expectations that women put on themselves based on these images. So there's no blame. It's sort of a ambivalent kind of tone to it. But it does, the point is actually to start a conversation.
And this play, I read the play and I loved it. It's really tragic in some ways because it captures that sense of like nobody wins.
Mm.
You know, the women certainly don't win trying to conform to these hollow and like impossible standards. There's one woman who's like insanely skinny and deprives herself, but is joyless. And there's another woman who does eat what she wants, but then feels great shame about it, you know?
Ugh.
But also that the men don't win either, because this all means that they have these kind of like codified, unrealistic, idealized, warped ideas of what a woman is.
Yeah.
And that view makes it impossible for them to have relationships.
Right.
With women, which he really wants. He really wants to understand women and have relationships with them. But all he's got in his head are the women laughing alone with salad.
Uh-huh.
And so that's something that we talk about a lot, which is, you know, this gender dynamic patriarchy, it definitely puts women at a disadvantage, but it's not good for anybody.
Exactly.
But it's also hilarious. It made me really sad I didn't get to see it, actually. So like in one scene, the whole stage is filled with lettuce and the women like dance fight to the death in lettuce, like literally tons and tons of lettuce. So here's a teaser clip that the Kirk Douglas Theater put out when they ran the show in 2016.
Making healthy choices, taking care of me, feeling good, living good, healthy and clean. I like that. People tell me, instead of living the life I could live, I eat salad, so I'm healthy. Therefore, I must be happy. But deep inside, somehow I'm not. Must eat more salad.
Possible side effects of laughing alone with salad include nausea, heart palpitations, dizziness while standing, temporary night blindness, and compulsive gambling.
And I just think that's so cool.
Yeah.
And it really just shows that this resonated with so many people and all these themes we're talking about. Even though it's a salad meme, it really had some meat on its bones. So have I depressed you so much?
I mean, I'm a little bit sad because now I know we'll never win.
We'll never win.
But guys won't win either, so.
Yeah. We all lose together.
So we all are losing.
We got to do this stuff
to call it all the sexism, but we can't just have women laughing alone with salad. Like, we also have to have men screaming at each other about meat. Like, we also have to have that meme. You know what I'm saying? Really, we do. Yeah. Like, we really need to have both sides of it because it does hurt everyone. And also, if we're only focusing on these negative images and messages to women, we're missing the source, mm-hmm. which is a lot of this men have to put female things down because that's how they prove their masculinity.
Yeah.
It's a whole mess,
uh-huh.
but it's all connected. And I want to say the answer is not women becoming empowered by being more like men. I saw so much stuff in here that was like, damn the patriarchy, girl, get that whole pizza. But again, that's a value judgment. And mm-hmm. you're saying that the way men eat is better, even though it has all these problems, it's the right way to do it. And that the way for women to be more powerful, to break free, is to just do it the way the guys do it.
Do what men do. Mm-hmm.
You know, we say all the time on this show that we love all our listeners equally and that we're not going to judge you if you like pumpkin spice right. or Hawaiian pineapple pizza, Leah.
Mm-hmm.
We don't judge people, right?
We don't judge people.
That's a callback.
So wouldn't it be great if that's just how we operated?
That would be.
Like, what if we didn't judge ourselves or each other or comment mm-hmm. what other people are eating or what we are eating? You know, what if we just stopped assigning value to it?
Yep.
And what if we stopped performing these expectations?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, can you imagine? That would just change. It would change everything because yeah. we are doing this performance from the time we're really little.
Right.
And we keep on performing.
We don't know we're doing it.
Uh-huh.
We didn't know that somebody gave us a script.
Yeah.
We just keep reciting the lines, you know? Mm-hmm. But like, how many eating disorders and health problems and self-esteem issues could we prevent or heal mm-hmm. if we let food just be food?
It's a great question.
So let's try it. Does everybody want to try this? You down?
I'm down.
All right, let's try it. So if you find yourself wanting to comment on the food you're about to eat or you ate or mm-hmm. the way someone else is eating, just pause. Just pause. Think about whether it's a gender-based comment, mm-hmm. first of all, and then just like see what happens if you don't.
Yeah, give it a shot.
Give it a shot.
I'm gonna try that. I bet we'd be so surprised. We would be really surprised at ourselves.
Let's try it.
I'm in.
Let us know how it goes. Follow us on Instagram at Food Day Pod. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Every Day is a Food Day.
The clips you heard today were from Stage Raw, Center Theater Group, and the Kirk Douglas Theater, and the trailer for The Mysterious Origins of Thousand Island Dressing, produced by Eric J. Roberts and Andrea Reeves.
Please subscribe, rate, and review the show. Check out the links in our show notes and connect with us on social media at Food Day Pod.
Every Day is a Food Day is a production of Van Valen Productions and Yum Day. It's produced and hosted by us, Leah Ballantyne and Anna Van Valen.
We'll see you next time. No.